You're listening to another wrestling episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns, featuring your guy, Bully Rye, and PJ Steven, presented by Anchor Podcasts.
That's right, everybody. It's another wrestling episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. As always, it's your guy, Bully Rye, and we couldn't have a wrestling episode without our wrestling show co-host, PJ Steven. PJ, what's going on, bud? How's everything?
I am so happy to be here. I know that I've been slacking lately because of work and working all these hours that I'm working. It's insane. But, man, I cannot wait to talk wrestling with you. We're doing something a little bit different here. We're just going to be talking about whatever's current right now, which is pretty fun because there's a lot of current things that are fantastic right now. Am I right?
Yeah, listen, it's there's a lot of stuff going on in the world of pro wrestling. Like PJ said, it's been a couple weeks since we've been able to get together to do a wrestling episode. And obviously you're listening to this wherever you get your podcast. So you're not seeing this episode live, but make sure you always go to facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns so you can watch our live podcast when we do. But yeah, a lot of fun stuff happening in the world of professional wrestling. So let's go ahead and just start the show here. Because we are a little over a week removed from WWE's Fastlane premium live event. So, PJ, what were your initial thoughts on Fastlane? I believe we previewed this pay-per-view when there was only two matches or premium live event, when there were only two or three matches on the card. I thought it was pretty entertaining. I didn't like at least one of the finishes. But give me your thoughts on Fastlane from this year's 2023 edition.
I really enjoyed it, actually. There were some things that I was a little like, well, that was sure not great. But it was okay. Well, now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, it was just okay.
Yeah.
It has been a little while since we watched it, so it's not as fresh. But yeah, it was just okay. But I did enjoy it, though. It was better than what I thought it was going to be honest.
Yeah, listen, there were only five matches on the card. There wasn't a match under 10 minutes. The first match of the night, we got to see the Judgment Day defend their tag titles against the team of Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso. I had a feeling that we were going to get a title change here, and we did in 20 minutes and 40 seconds. We're going to talk some current events post Fastlane here in a minute. But this does set up a potential Jey versus Jimmy in a tag team match for these undisputed titles. Did the right guys go over? And what do you see next for Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso as your new tag team champions?
I mean, you know, you talk about the right guys going over. I like that they went over because I did not expect it. I mean, did you expect that to happen? Because
I did.
You did? I mean, well, I guess I expected them to win because of, you know, who was on the car or who was on who was actually in the match. But at the same time, dude, it's like it's such a weird pairing, but it worked out really well. And I, like I said, I enjoyed it. But yeah, I do think the right team went over here, and I think it's going to turn into probably, you know, maybe Jey turning on Cody, and that's how you set up for Roman and Cody at Mania, maybe. I don't know. But I did enjoy the match, and I liked. I kind of liked it went over. Because to me, again, I didn't expect it myself.
So I heard somebody give me a theory that they thought it was a good time for Priest and Balor to lose the titles because it sets up a potential for Damian Priest to cash in his Money in the Bank later on in the show. I liked the prospect of seeing a potential rivalry with Cody and Jey against Sammy and KO, which we would get a tag team title match from them the next night or the next Monday night on Raw, where those two teams faced off. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit as well. But yeah, I kind of had the idea that Cody was going to get another tag team title run. I thought it was the right time to do it with Jey. We had already saw them take the North American title off of Dominic Mysterio, albeit for two or three days. And so I don't think they're worried about taking the titles off of the Judgment Day. Yeah, it adds some storyline here and some depth to this Judgment Day storyline going forward with the new champion. So curious to see where they go from here, and we'll get to that here as well in just a minute. The next matchup on the card was a 10-minute six-man tag team match. The LWO were supposed to be joined by one of their stable mates, but they were both taken out on Friday Night SmackDown. So then it was Rey Mysterio and Santos Escobar in a 2-on-3 match against Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. And I guess towards the end of this match, we get the return of Carlito, a.k.a. Carlito Colon, Carlito Caribbean Cool, if you remember him from that far back.
I haven't thought about that in a long time, but yeah, that was
yeah. Pretty cool. Carlito has officially signed a new contract with WWE, so he'll be here for at least a little while. He would team up with the LWO, and they beat Bobby Lashley and the Profits on their first match together as a trio. Was this the right move, PJ? I don't think it was. Not even close.
Not even close. Hurt Business should have had that. And, I mean, yeah, no one really wins or loses, so it's hard for me to argue that. You know, I've talked about that on the show a lot. But, like, I think they needed that momentum a little bit more because I think Lashley is such a star. And not that these guys aren't, but, like, Carlito, man, like, come on.
And you don't like Carlito?
I like Carlito, but he has no business being in a team that goes over the Bobby Lashley's team. No business.
I'm still upset that we haven't seen Carlito, Primo, and Epico team up.
That's okay. I
mean, listen, I'm all for like the family affair. We got another bloodline potentially with the Colognes. If you somehow get Primo and Epico back, put them all in the LWO and split them off. You know. The Puerto Rican descent versus Mexican descent, whatever you want to do, where you sort of have a civil war with the LWO. If you really want to advance the storyline, there's stuff to do. But I'm with you, man. Like, Lashley and the Street Profits are supposed to be this, like, ultra-aggressive, like, angry, we're-going-to-take-what-we-want team. And granted, you're not going to let Carlito lose on his, I guess, re-debut.
Why?
I mean, why bring him in to eat a pin? I'm sure there was in somewhere in his contract is like, I just don't want to eat a pin on the first night back.
Aleister Black lost his first match against Neville in the WWE.
That's different. Aleister Black wasn't coming from being unemployed to being in WWE. Carlito was not employed by a wrestling company prior to signing this contract.
It makes more sense to me for Carlito, the guy who hasn't been in the business, not in the business. Well, I guess he's done indie shit, or indie stuff. But, like, it makes more sense for him to lose than the guy who's fresh off the indie scene and a brand new character to lose. I think we're in agreement, by the way, that we still think the wrong team won. But definitely, I don't think Carlito should have gone over at all.
I think you could have turned it in such a way where you don't like start the match without a partner, and then Carlito comes in halfway through. I think there's a way that you can work this out where, like, okay, you beat up our teammates, so here's our new partner, here's Carlito, he starts the match, and then Santos is the one to eat the pin instead of Mysterio or Carlito. But listen, it is what it is, man. Like, we're in agreement that the wrong team won. I'm curious to know if they're going to add Carlito to the LWO, if they're going to bring anybody. There's been talks about expanding the LWO, and I think they sort of need to because I feel bad because I couldn't. It's Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wild. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. Are your two teammates from the LWO? But I feel like they're more jobbers for this faction at this point, which is, you know, the LWO is one of the highest selling, you know, merchandise, you know, as far as when it comes to, you know, merchandise sales, the LWO is right up there with everybody else on the roster.
I agree. Can I tell you something real quick? You know what? Sure. I just bought? You know what I just bought?
What's that?
I bought a vintage LWO shirt from eBay.
That's incredible.
I didn't want to buy the new one. Is that okay?
I don't see a problem with it.
I don't want to buy the new. I've always kind of wanted one because I like the LWO. You know, I'm a big supporter of the cruiserweights, obviously, in WCW. Yeah. They were some of my favorite matches. However, I didn't want the new one. I wanted the vintage one. So I bought one.
You know, I've got a luchador mask that's red, white, and green upstairs. That if I bought an LWO shirt, I could probably pull it off. But I decided to go as Cactus Jack for Halloween.
That's a great Halloween. So when you said that, it reminded me when you said that. I just got to find a Cactus Jack shirt or whatever. It reminded me that back in the day, maybe it was it was probably over a few years ago. Cactus Jack put out, or I guess Pro Wrestling Tees and Mick Foley, they put out a shirt that's the vintage Cactus Jack look, but it doesn't say wanted dead or alive. It just says wanted dead, which is what the original shirt said. I ended up buying one. I was really happy about that. So I went as Cactus Jack 1 year too, because I have the hair and the beard, and I have the look and I have the stamina, honestly. Foley. So I was like, yeah, I'll go as Cactus Jack. That's fun. But you talk about Lucha Mask, man. Like, you remember I bought that Ultimo Dragon Lucha Mask?
Yeah.
WrestleCade or WrestleCon, whatever.
Now you just got to get the headdress, the thing that goes over your chest and shoulders, and you're one step away from cosplaying him for Halloween. Let's move on here because we still got a good bit of stuff to get here. Third match on the card, the women's championship match. WWE Women's Championship is on the line, a triple threat match with Io Sky defending against Asuka and Charlotte Flair. This match goes 17 minutes and 20 seconds. I predicted the winner and who she was going to go over. And in fact, Io Sky does go over here on Asuka and Charlotte Flair. I thought that Charlotte might be the one to take the title off. If not, it was going to set up what it eventually did. PJ, I would be shocked if this wasn't your favorite match on the card.
You would be correct in saying that this was definitely my favorite match on the card. It was incredible, and I loved it. And I'm not a big Charlotte Flair fan. I'm not, but damn, is she not good in the ring? Yeah. I mean, she is incredible. I can't, you can't deny that. And what I also enjoyed was the chemistry between Asuka and Io. I mean, they are just terrific wrestlers. And I like the whole match. And the finish made sense.
Yep. No, I'm right there with you there. Really good match for the women's title. No women's world title on this card. But you did get to see some three of the best women wrestlers in the world right here stuck in the middle of this card. Next up on Fastlane was probably PJ's most anticipated match on the card. And it was the Bloodline, Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa taking on the team of LA Knight and PJ's favorite wrestler, John Cena. God. This match got the same time that the women's championship match did, 17 minutes, 20 seconds. John Cena and LA Knight go over. Obviously, you're going to get Roman Reigns returning to SmackDown the Friday after this premium live event took place. PJ, I know how you feel about John Cena. That's why I always make fun of you whenever I bring up his name. Let's speculate for a second here, because it was heavily rumored that the reason he was coming back to WWE was because of the SAG-AFTRA strike, which, if you've been living under a rock or don't follow television and movies, it was the United States writer's strike, essentially, where TV and movies were not getting written because they were fighting for better pay. And the rumor is that once this strike is over with, which they've already come to an agreement, and TV shows and other things are already starting to be produced, that Cena would be back on his way out of WWE. What are your thoughts with this match? And I think I know your answer, but how long do you think it is before we see John Cena back out of WWE?
I don't know how long it's going to be, but listen, I'm going to take a second to just address the audience and address the camera here. Please end this strike. Please end the strike.
The strike is over, man.
Because
the strike is over.
Oh, is it over?
Yeah, SNL produced a live show this past Saturday.
Oh well, then go back.
Your late night talk shows are going again. All that stuff.
Then get off my TV. It's over. Go back to being a little actor. Go back to being the Marine 18 and go back to, the whole match, by the way, the crowd was hot for it. I won't deny that at all. The crowd was hot. And, but on the flip side, John Cena still has not learned to shut the hell up in the ring. I mean, you could clearly hear him go in the corner. You're going to do a hot tag. All right, do that. And I'm like, dude, what is going on?
Do you think it has more to do with the fact that microphones are picking up too heavy on the ring when he's in there?
I don't care. Does anyone else have that problem?
I've heard other people call spots.
Every single match?
Not every single match, no.
I agree with you that it's not entirely, you know, those mics pick up a lot. I'm not denying that. But at the same time, I mean, you know, I don't hear anyone else shouting hot tag. I mean, good God, man. You would think he would learn by now, but obviously he doesn't, and that's okay because I don't have to look at him anymore. That being said, the match wasn't terrible. The crowd was hot for it. Solo Sikoa is a future star.
Yeah, listen, I love all these guys in the ring. I know you're not going to like hearing this, but I think John Cena gets a little too much crap considering what he's done for the business. I mean, he carried... Now, granted, we're going to talk about the negative as to what he did when we talk about the main event of this show. But, you know, there was a lull in professional wrestling after the WCW purchased by WWE where there was no competition. And you had to find a way to keep fans interested and keep fans intrigued. And John Cena led that era of WWE. And you could argue that, you know, he didn't do it alone. But he did. He went from being this guy that he's been on record of saying he did not like the way that he debuted. He thought that he would go back and change a bunch of things of what he's done.
You think he'd go back in time and learn how to wrestle?
Listen, he wasn't a bad wrestler, man. I don't think he's a bad wrestler. That's unfair.
He's not Hulk Hogan, but like he's not good.
He's not Hogan.
No, I'm not saying that.
He's also not AJ Styles. He's not, you know, I wouldn't put him up there with Chris Jericho with stuff that he's able to do. But that was never his character. It's like saying that Goldberg was a bad wrestler. Yes, if you wanted to have Goldberg go out there and put out mat wrestling matches 10 minutes a night, Goldberg would have failed miserably.
Yeah.
But that wasn't his character. And that's never been, after Cena's Thuganomics gimmick, that hasn't been his character.
So your excuse for Cena not being a good wrestler is that's not his character? Because that's what you just did for Goldberg. He said,
I'm not saying that Cena's a bad wrestler. I think he does just fine with what he's supposed to do. He's put on entertaining matches and throughout his career, John Cena again.
You just described Goldberg though when you just said he does what he can with what he. What did you say? He does
his gimmick. He does. He works for what his gimmick is.
That doesn't.
The difference is Cena was more entertaining, and Cena was better in ring than Goldberg was.
Yeah, I'm not comparing the two. I'm just using your example. But like, a lot of it's not his fault. By the way, I'll say that not a lot of it's not his fault. A lot of it was his booking. You know, when the whole Super Cena thing came, and you said it yourself about someone who's in the main event, that that's what it's turning into, and it's terrible. Did you not? And we'll get there.
Yeah, we're gonna get there.
We're gonna get there.
Here's the problem with Cena, is that the way they booked him, there's a lot of other talent that it could have gone over.
Absolutely.
And could have made for some compelling storylines, where this idea of a Super Cena, never existed. And you still made him feel like the underdog. Because the problem is that they booked Cena to be the forever underdog, but he never lost, yes. Right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what made people start resenting John Cena, was because you had guys like Umaga, and as bad as he was, the great Kali, and he even for a while ended the career of Batista, who was a fan favorite for a while. Like there were people that John Cena was pitted against. That fans clamored, oh, this would be a great time to take the title off of him to build to make a star out of Umaga, like Umaga wasn't a star. The great Kali smashing watermelons and squishing the head of Rey Mysterio to the point where his face bleeds, and then you have Cena eventually overcome the odds and defeat the great Kali. So it's the way for what he was intended to be. For as long as he was intended to be it, I think John Cena did a phenomenal job, and it's why He is regarded as one of the greatest of all time. He's not AJ Styles. He's not Bryan Danielson. I wouldn't even compare him to that of a Christopher Daniels. Like, those guys are different wrestlers. They're different types of superstars.
He's not one of the greatest of all time if he's not on those levels.
He's not one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, per se, but he's one of the greatest performers of all time.
Sports entertainers?
I mean, if to that point, Hulk Hogan would have to be regarded as one of the greatest.
I'm not debating that. He's a terrible person and a terrible wrestler, and he's the prime example of being in the right place at the right time, sort of like John Cena was, but had the wrestling skill of a plank.
I don't see – so, again, I'll agree with you, Hogan had the wrestling skill of a plank. I think Cena was better than that. And that's – I think that's the argument, is that you think Cena is one of the worst wrestlers to ever do it. And I'm heavily disagreeing.
I really do, and one of the reasons, too, is that it proved in his latest matches, obviously he doesn't really learn because he's still making the same mistakes. And someone who makes the same mistakes over and over, isn't that the definition of just insanity? If you do
the mistake is him calling his shots in the ring too loud.
Yes. It.
What other mistakes is he making? What other mistakes is he making?
Well, that's the big one, but it's what Cornette call. And I can't believe I'm quoting Jim Cornette, but it actually works here. He's exposing the business.
That's okay. If you want to come from that perspective, yes, I can understand where you can be frustrated with him, quote unquote, exposing the business. But if you go back and watch pro wrestling from the time that, we've been doing your time machine back in the late 90s, 97, 98, you can go back. And even though the microphones weren't picking it up, you can go back and watch those matches. And if you're not paying attention to what the commentators are saying and you're watching the match, you can see guys get picked up and you can see them talking to each other in the match. You just cannot hear them because the mics weren't picking them up. That's doing the exact same thing. That's exposing the business. You just can't hear them. So what's the difference?
But then if you can't hear them, it's just a bear shit in the woods? Like, sure. Or what is it? Yeah, well, that's the thing. Have you ever seen it? But it happens. That's the same thing. The difference is, yes, we're hearing it, but it doesn't matter from the fact that he could just not do it, not talk as loud. It's like the excuse is like, well, sometimes he just talks really loud. Like, what does he have, larger?
Maybe he's got bad hearing. We don't know. That's a legitimate excuse. I don't know. And I'm probably just chalking it up. But people who have hearing problems tend to talk louder because they cannot hear themselves speak.
I don't buy that.
My dad was half deaf, and he couldn't hear you, and he yelled most of the time because he couldn't hear
you. You're half dead, or half dead, excuse me. You're half dead.
What an asshole.
I know, that was really terrible. It's okay. My dad's dead. You can say something about it. Your deaf, half-deaf father.
There you go.
Can probably call matches or call spots in the ring better than John Cena.
Well, he hated wrestling, so he wouldn't want to do it. Let's move on here because we spent a lot of time talking about John Cena.
Way more than what I wanted to make. I'll never deny, he's, and I even had to, swallow my pride the other day when somebody asked me the top 20 most, in a professional way, not a personal way, top 20 wrestlers of all time. And I mean, John Cena's on there because he drew money. Because money doesn't lie, by the way. Money is incapable of lying. Numbers can't lie. And John Cena made money for the business. But again, so did a lot of people who couldn't hardly lace their boots.
Well, it's also should be mentioned with the whole the charity stuff and the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The fact that he's done more than anybody goes to talk about his star power and what he did for the business. Let's move on here because we talked about the Super Cena and the idea that they tried to bill him as an underdog, but he never lost. The last man standing match for the World Heavyweight Championship went 28 minutes, 25 seconds. Seth Rollins goes over on Shinsuke Nakamura. Storyline, obviously, Rollins has a bad back. Nakamura has been focusing in on it. Nakamura beat Seth Rollins up for 25 minutes of this 28-minute match. And Shinsuke gets hit with two moves and can't get to his feet. Seth Rollins goes over and walks off of his own accord, walks on his own unassisted back to the locker room, essentially no selling. The fact that his injured back has just been beat up for 25 minutes. There's been a lot of arguments in the internet wrestling community about, oh, everybody wanted Seth Rollins as champion, but now that you see him champion and you see him winning all the time, now everybody's mad about it. I think you would agree that it's the booking behind it. Now, granted, I have my own opinions because I don't think Colby should be champion at all. But the idea is now they have created a super Seth to where they want him to be this underdog, and now he is overcoming it, a la what they did with John Cena in the mid 2000s to the mid 2010s. PJ, I think both you and I agree that Nakamura, this is the time to put the title on him. I think it's time for him to mosey on down the old dusty trail and leave WWE and find success elsewhere. Would you agree?
Absolutely, I would agree. I don't have a by the way, I don't have a problem with Seth Rollins winning. We talked about that because I think they already dropped the ball with Nakamura when he lost to AJ Styles at WrestleMania, or when, you know, if he lost, whatever, but then he just turned heel by kicking AJ Styles in the balls. I thought that was the moment there. I was like, well, there goes Nakamura. What I have a problem with is, you know what it reminded me of? SummerSlam 2005, Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan. Shawn Michaels whips up Hogan the entire match. Hogan, crimson mask, bloodied up, and then we get a big boot, leg drop, 1, 2, 3, and it's over. I mean, that's what that match reminded me of.
Yep.
And I thought it was terribly booked. I cannot wait for Nakamura to go back to New Japan. Hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. Yeah, I hated it. I hated it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Again, the way they booked it, I can't say it any better, PJ. It was a perfect way to describe it. Seth Rollins retains the World Heavyweight Championship. I think they're putting him in a program with Drew McIntyre. Because they started a program with Nakamura and Ricochet on the Monday night after the show. We got to get to some more WWE news because something sort of big happened over on SmackDown Friday night. But before we do that, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more WWE news. We're going to transition into some AEW news as Dynamite was forced to move days to see our second edition of the Tuesday Night War, if you will. And then we're going to close the show talking some New Japan to whet the beak of PJ Steven. Stay tuned. We'll be right back right here on Tap House and Touchdowns.
This episode is brought to you by Carolina Business Equipment. With offices in Charleston, Greenville, Columbia, and Florence, Carolina Business Equipment can supply your copiers, computers, and printers anywhere in the state of South Carolina. Call my personal best friend Aaron Thompson at 843-452-8761 for a quote today, and make sure you tell him that Ryan from Tap House and Touchdown sent you. Carolina Business Equipment, you worry about your business, let us handle your technology.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Bully Rye, PJ Steven, back with you to talk more WWE news. So let's just get right into it. Raw and SmackDown took place after Fastlane, which would have been, I guess, last week as of this recording. Friday night on SmackDown, we learned that Adam Pearce storyline received a promotion and became the general manager of Monday Night Raw, which meant that there needed to become a new general manager for SmackDown. And that job goes to none other than Nick Aldis. PJ, what are your thoughts on Nick Aldis returning to WWE to be the new general manager for Friday Night SmackDown?
I'm a fan of Nick Aldis, former NWA champion. I really enjoyed him. I don't know what he's doing here, but I hope that he gets in the ring shortly because, honestly, Nick Aldis can work. He's not terrific, but he's great. I like him. And he did good in NWA. NWA gets a lot of flack now because, you know, they had their boy, what was it? Tyrese as the champion.
Tyrese,
it's horrible. But anyway. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Nick Aldis. I think he can work. I think he can cut a promo. I think he'll be pretty good there.
Would you agree that this move back to general managers, especially considering the purchase, the transaction closing, where WWE was purchased by Endeavor and now is lumped into a company with the UFC called TKO on the New York Stock Exchange. Do you think this move to new GMs is long overdue? Or do you think it's the perfect time to reintroduce the general managers on the eve of what we'll have coming up with Survivor Series coming up here next month?
Actually, that's a good thought. I didn't really thought about that, but yeah, I think it is actually.
Yeah. Listen, it's sort of this thing where we've been sort of confused. There's been a line blurred about who belongs on Raw and who belongs on SmackDown, because the every time we see the brand split and we see that the brand drafts, they don't really stick to who's on what brand, especially considering the tag team champions get to go to both shows. Now you've got people from Raw and SmackDown going to NXT, which we'll get to here in a minute as well. So hopefully this new GM era, maybe the GM era 2.5, 3.0, whatever you want to call it, will help create the true division of the brands that we've been needing to see, which brings me to my next point. Jey Uso was traded to Monday Night Raw in storyline after, I forgot what pay-per-view it was, our premium live event, excuse me, thanks to Cody Rhodes asking him to come back to WWE. You know, the story is there. They're the new tag team champions. But the idea was that they were going to trade. Somebody was going to going over to Friday nights. And it was announced on SmackDown this past Friday night after the announcement of Nick Aldis becoming your new general manager of SmackDown, that Kevin Owens has been drafted to Friday night SmackDown to be part of the SmackDown roster once again. But this means that this is the end of the partnership, at least on television, with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. They were the hottest thing going just 6 to 7 months ago. And now they're on opposing shows. PJ, what do you take about this Kevin Owens being the person that's traded to Friday Night SmackDown?
It does nothing for me, because I don't think they're going to stick to it, because they never do. Yeah.
So you don't think that the new general manager dynamic would insinuate that people are going to have to stay on their own rosters going forward?
I mean, in theory, yeah, but I don't think, no. In theory, yes, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I think, thanks to the rumors and innuendo that the parent company gave Triple H, Paul Levesque, full creative control over WWE, I'm hoping that he makes the right decision and sort of sticks to the brand draft and forces stars to stay on their shows. But with that being said, I think we're done seeing Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn as a team. And I don't, it's probably a good thing, in my opinion, that we didn't have to see one of them turn, because we all sort of expected Kevin Owens was going to turn on Sami at some point.
Yeah.
And we were going to get that rivalry at WrestleMania, which we still could. But I'm with you. Like if it turns to nothing and Kevin Owens still continues to show up on Raw, then there's an issue. But I think now that they've got general managers in charge of one show, I think, like, again, the storyline writes itself. You can have the general manager say, "You're not supposed to be here. Arrest him, get him off my show," for both shows, and leading up to Survivor Series, where we get one brand versus the other. And then that sort of redivides the roster. But at some point, I feel like you're going to have to either split the tag team championships again, or you're going to have to create a new set of tag team champions. Otherwise, you're still going to have the cross-show promotion. PJ, the last thing I'm going to talk about as far as WWE specific is we saw the debut in Fastlane of one Jade Cargill. She literally just showed up, shook hands with Triple H and walked into the back. She showed up on NXT the following Tuesday to do the exact same thing with Shawn Michaels. And then she shows up on Friday Night SmackDown to sort of shake the hand of Charlotte Flair, who was doing an interview / promo in the back. What are you expecting from former AEW original and AEW star Jade Cargill here in WWE?
I'm expecting a monster. I'm expecting like, I'm honestly expecting her to take the title off Rey or Rhea Ripley.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Immediately?
No, eventually, not off the rip, but like, you know, she's gonna work her way through the entire roster and then get to Rhea and get that belt off. I think she's the one that takes it off Rhea. Who else?
Do you think Jade Cargo wins the Royal Rumble?
I do think that.
You like that?
I do like that a lot. I think she borderlines like Lesnar's the Rumble. Like, not to that point because I thought that was silly and stupid, but like, I'll say Kane's the Rumble. You know, she eliminates like so many people like Kane used to do, but then actually she goes on and like wins it. Yeah, that's
brilliant. Yeah.
I would be very happy for that.
I love the gasp, the audible gasp that you let out.
Like I would love that a lot if she won the Rumble for real.
That's awesome. No, listen, I think the sky's the limit. I hope that the Performance Center, because I've been on record on the show before saying that she needed to work on her stuff in ring in order to become that next level star. And so I'm curious to see what happens. I mean, we're already seeing a change in character of one Brian Pillman Jr. on NXT, where they have basically let him like write off his father, and they're giving him some weird name by the guy who quote unquote actually raised him. So they're trying stuff with the people coming over from AEW, but they are. It is not often that WWE brings a star from another company and just thrusts them into the spotlight without ever having worked in WWE before. So very curious to see what WWE does with Jade Cargill, especially considering with what WWE did for NXT when AEW announced that they were going to have to run AEW Dynamite on Tuesdays for the next few weeks for the MLB playoffs that would be taking place Wednesday nights. AEW Dynamite, we were going to see, let me go back to the calendar here. AEW Dynamite, it took place on Tuesday, October the 10th, would feature the in-ring debut in AEW, that of Adam Copeland, i.e. Edge, facing off against Luchasaurus. There was a bunch of other stuff that they had scheduled on that show. But, PJ, NXT did some counter-programming, some very heavy counter-programming to sort of kind of try to put it to AEW. I don't know about you, but I had two TVs set up that 12-year-old me would have died for as I played Dynamite on one TV and NXT on the other. How did you feel about having both of those shows on the same night? And give the audience your thoughts about what WWE did to counter program AEW Dynamite.
I loved it. I think it's funny that like people still think that AEW isn't competition to WWE. If it wasn't, WWE wouldn't have done those things. I mean, you had Undertaker and Cody Rhodes and John Cena on NXT. Okay. I didn't really love them being on there. I actually did prefer the AEW show, but the NXT was really good. I love Carmelo Hayes up there getting the nudge from Taker, but I don't know. Taker being up, and you know me, Undertaker's, you know, my top dude besides Sting, my number two dude. But it makes Bron Breakker look weak, man. I hated that. You know, they just put him on there just to get some views, and then it was, well, go out there and pretty much beat up our like top star, you 50-year-old guy. You know, yeah. I hated it.
But at the same token, you let The Rock come in and beat up Austin Theory. I think it says
more. I hated that too.
I don't know. I think it says more to these young guys that they're getting the rub, even if they're getting beat up by the legends, that they're getting the rub of being allowed to work with the legends. I mean, at this point, you had Austin Theory work with Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena, and The Rock. And now you've had Bron Breakker deal with John Cena and The Undertaker. I think it goes more to show what WWE thinks about these guys, that if you're going to let somebody come in and sort of eat a finisher, eat a choke slam, rock bottom, people's elbow, whatever you want to do, if it's going to be like guys like Austin Theory and Bron Breakker, they're doing something right because they're letting him work with these guys. Like you would disagree with that sentiment?
No, it's good that they're doing that, but to me, it still doesn't really do them any favors to a storyline perspective. It goes back to my argument with Kevin Owens and Stone Cold. Like, is it great that Kevin Owens got to work with that legend of Stone Cold Steve Austin? Absolutely. Does it make him look weak that, to me, he challenged a 50-year-old dude and the 50-year-old dude beat him up? No, I think it's silly. But I get why people like it. I just don't.
Well, nevertheless, if you had to take one of these shows, your dogs are excited about AEW and NXT going head-to-head. I think they were going to argue with the question I was going to pose to you, PJ. If you had to take one of these shows that took place on Tuesday night, who had the better show, NXT or WWE?
I think
AEW, I apologize.
I think AEW. And for the sake that they didn't have to bring in has-beens to make the show work.
I mean, I don't want to call Edge a has-been, but
Edge is a full-time worker, contracted worker right now. Cena's going back once the strikes are over, and Taker, do I have to say?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
But my thing is too, Frick. Everyone that appeared on AEW are supposed to be there. When's the last time you saw Cena, Taker, and Cody Rhodes on NXT?
I think it was their debut of Cena and Taker on NXT.
And there's my point.
Yeah.
But AEW did have a really good show. Orange Cassidy getting the belt back. That was a great match with him and Rey Fénix. The whole event was really well done. I enjoyed it. I got a full disclosure. I had the two TVs set up, and then I had my laptop with New Japan on it, which was, that's what I wanted to watch. But,
No, listen, that's what I guess marks do, and we're both admitted marks. Let's stay on the subject of AEW for a minute. FTR, the Saturday, or I guess the collision the weekend before WWE Fastlane, FTR is squashed and loses the AEW Tag Team Championships to Big Bill and Absolute Ricky Starks. It's rumored that one of the guys in FTR has a rib injury. We obviously saw the legal issues that came out prior to All In London, or was it All Out in London, whatever the case was.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about FTR? Because, again, we talked about this off the air. Rumors that they're going to WWE despite them signing an extended contract. What are your thoughts on FTR? Again, the AEW's come out and said that they wanted it for the shock value, a la John Cena and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam a couple years ago. What are your thoughts on FTR getting squashed here in a match on Collision?
I don't think it was necessary. I think it was silly. I think it should have been a better match. It makes FTR. I think that's a really bad, terrible booking decision. I get it, unless there's a real injury. I get that. I totally understand that. You have to look out for your people. Rey Mysterio got squashed by Samoa Joe at WrestleMania, which probably should have happened anyway because it's Rey Mysterio and Samoa Joe. But that being said, it's because Rey Mysterio was injured. And, you got to look out for your people. I get that. But if it was just for the shock value, I don't agree with that. I think that's really silly. And FTR deserves better.
So having said that, what's next for FTR?
Overcoming the injury, if there is one, and getting their belts back.
I'm with you.
It's hard to say because you don't know what actually happened. I didn't mean to take a long dramatic pause nothing, but I'm just trying to think of like what could be next, and it depends on what's actually true.
Well, we know what's next for Jay White in AEW. Your guy, new
finally, yeah, finally.
Jay White is in the title picture. He has taken the title from MJF and is running around with the title. They are slated for the next AEW pay-per-view where Jay White will challenge MJF for the championship. I know you're extremely excited about this. is Jay White the guy to take the title off of MJF? And will we see anything from either the Bullet Club Gold or from Roderick Strong and company to sort of help take the title off of MJF here?
I don't know. It's hard to say because I really don't want the belt off of MJF, but I'm also like, man, Jay White, man, he helped lead New Japan when he had the IWGP champion, and he is a terrific champion. So it's, I'd like to see him take it off of it, but I'm also like, man, MJF's a great champion. I don't know. That's a hard one, actually.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it's time. I mean, first of all, AEW has not been keen on playing hot potato with their world title. So it would be a big deal if Jay White were to win it, especially considering the WWE guys that have challenged for it that haven't won it outside of Jericho being the first champion, Moxley eventually getting his hands on it, and then obviously CM Punk getting it and then never losing it and then finally leaving the company as he should have. Yeah.
You know what? I mean, have Jay White win it, and maybe that's how he gets back to New Japan. I mean, I know that the big thing is like, you know, hey, he lost the match. He can't go back to New Japan, blah, 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 never seen it ever. But maybe that gets him the way back in. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm right there with you. Nevertheless, I want to take some time to talk New Japan, so let's zip through here real quick. We're going to talk Orange Cassidy taking the international title back. We may skip over that because it was originally supposed to be John Moxley, who was never supposed to lose the title, but they had to call an audible due to a concussion, and he was supposed to challenge again on television, wasn't cleared, and so Orange Cassidy goes and challenges Rey Fénix, wins the title back, and so we'll just skip over that real quick because we'll talk. Adam Copeland, the Rated R superstar, formerly known as Edge, and his rivalry with Christian here in AEW, so already 2 to 3 weeks in since his premiere, very famously calls Christian out to ask him to team up one more time. And on live television, Christian tells Edge to go F himself. It seems like they're booking this the right way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I love it. Love it. It's so different than what we've seen Edge and Christian do. And I dig it. Well, Adam Copeland and Christian, excuse me.
I'm going to keep calling him Edge because that's who he was.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I'm excited to see it.
If you could fantasy book it, what comes next for these two?
Oh.
Like if you could book it a year out, does the year end with them teaming back up again and winning the AEW tag titles to go on one final run before Edge retires?
I don't know. That's hard. Eventually, yes, but it's like it's going to happen longer than a year because what I would envision would be Christian, Christian getting away from Edge as best as he can, a la Scott and Rick kind of, and kind of like, you know, he's trying to get through, you know, he's got to get through Nick Wayne and he's got to get through Luchasaurus. He's got to get through whoever else that they that Christian's able to pursue in, you know. But I think it would be just really cool to get, and then finally the crowd pops when Adam's able to get his hands on Christian. But you could book that a year out, but I think it's going to take them when they team up. It'll be longer than a year.
Yeah, and I don't think we ever got the proper Edge and Christian match in WWE. So, like, the Edge versus Christian.
Not even a little bit.
And so I think they're going to have a little more creative freedom here in AEW to really go all out. No pun intended.
No pun intended. Yeah, there you go. I like that.
PJ, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, we're going to talk AEW. We're going to talk New Japan.
There we go.
The best of the Super Junior Tag Team Tournament. The New Japan Road to Destruction pay-per-view. And then we're going to close the show with a curtain call. We're going to talk about biggest debuts and rival companies in the history of pro wrestling. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to wrap up the show with New Japan talk right here on Tap House and Touchdowns.
Established in 2008, One-Stop Repairs in North Charleston, South Carolina, is your one-stop shop for all of your electronic repair needs. Specializing in cell phones, tablets, computers, laptops, and game consoles, One-Stop Repairs offers reputable and quality service with the quickest turnaround time and the most competitive prices in the Lowcountry. You can find them on Google with an exceptional 4.9 star rating or on Facebook by searching for One-Stop Repairs. Call for a quote today at 843-343-6310. That's the number one, One-Stop Repairs.
All right, welcome back to the
American made.
Welcome back.
God, I love that so much.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Let's get into some New Japan Pro Wrestling talk. This is where you're going to hear PJ Steven do a lot more of the talking than me, which is probably a nice welcome happening for anyone listening. Not only do I have the face for radio, I have the voice for radio as well. PJ, why don't you give a rundown of the Super Junior Tag Team Tournament here in New Japan? You've got the brackets, you've got the matchups. Let's hear some of what New Japan has going on in the Super Junior Tag Division.
I look forward to the Super Junior Tag Division every year because I love the Super Juniors in New Japan, much like I like the Cruiserweights in WCW, like we talked about earlier on the show. Love it. So the biggest things that I look forward to is like the winner, whoever wins the tournament, goes on to face the Super Junior Tag Team Champion, your Super Junior Tag Team Champions. Last year at Wrestle Kingdom, it was Akira and TJP taking on Lilo Rush and Yo. Like, that was an incredible match. And I'll talk about the brackets here shortly, but Lilo Rush is back in the tournament along with Yo, so it's not out of the possibility that they might win this again. But we're going to get there here. I want to talk about Road to Destruction first because it was it was really well done. And I enjoy. Well, you know, I talked about the Super Junior. I just talk about that first. So the brackets so far, well, I guess it's already finalized, but the brackets are as follows. So for Super Junior Tag League 2023, Yo and a mystery partner, who that's obviously going to be Lilo Rush, Kushida and Kevin Knight, Taguchi and OKC, El Desperado and Master Wato. I'm going to hang on to that. Doki and Taka Michinoku, Bushi and Titan, or actually it's Titan, Robbie Eagles and Fujita. TJP and Akira again, Clark Connors and Drilla Molini, who was your IWGP strong champions, which is fun, and then Sho and Kamenanu, who was Bullet Club. I want to talk about Desperado and Wato because that is such a strange, not strange, that's not, that's a too dramatic of a word. These are rivals that are now coming together as a team, which I really enjoy. But I think that that's going to be your dark horse team. And if it is Lilo Rush teaming up with Yo, I kind of want them to go over, but I want Master Wato and Desperado to take the whole thing. I'm a big fan of El Desperado. I love Master Wato. I've said that since his debut. I think those are the guys that are going to do it. Big fan of those guys. But the Super Junior Tag Team Tournament is so important because you get a lot of new faces in there, just like you did with the G1, and they show you really what they can do. And I'm stoked to see that. I really, really am. Any of those teams kind of like poke up at you there, Frick?
I mean, listen, I like the Master Wato pairing. And I like anything that Lilo Rush does. So those are the two that stand out to me, honestly. But again, it's the Super Juniors in New Japan. I watched the finals last year. We might have talked about it on the show, and it was fantastic pro wrestling. It was really fun to watch. So even if I don't get to watch the whole tournament, I'm excited to at least watch the finals, regardless of who's in there.
Well, you know that, you know, I'll be messaging you just like I did with the the G1. I was putting the brackets in every day and like trying to trying to do that. It was
well. Make sure you go and do that over on the Wrestling Movement, the page that we help run over on Facebook. If you haven't already, make sure you go go to Facebook and search the Wrestling Movement and give that page a like and a follow. And PJ will keep you updated on there as well. Wanted to throw that cheap little plug in there and a nice way of you getting the results out for people that might otherwise not get to see them.
Oh, absolutely. So let's go over Destruction here. New Japan Pro Wrestling Destruction 2023 took place in Ryogoku Sumo Hall. A couple of, preliminary matches, but one of the coolest matches there was Tetsuya Naito, Shingo Takagi, Bushi, and Yota Tsuji taking on Jeff Cobb, Great O'Khan, Henare, and Callum Newman, who is the new one of the new members of United Kingdom, which is super fun. Great match. Naito is going to go over there, get the pin actually on Great O'Khan. Of course, Tetsuya Naito is your G1 winner, who will take on the winner of our main event here, which is Sonata versus Evil for the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. For the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, you had Drilla Maloney and Clark Connors. They were your champions. Taking on Kushida and Kevin Knight. They retain here. Drilla Maloney and Clark Connors retain here, which means they will be at Wrestle Kingdom, unless they lose the titles before then. They will be at Wrestle Kingdom, and the winners of the Super Junior Tournament will take on them. Back to some great matches here. Yuji Nagata, Shota Umino, and Master Wado is going to take on Minoru Suzuki, Ren Narita, and El Desperado. Again, rivals coming together to be tag team in the Super Junior. At the end of the match, by the way, Shota Umino, his team went over. Nagata and Suzuki shook hands. Umino and Ren Narita shook hands. And then El Desperado and El Desperado and Master Wato put out his hand. And then El Desperado grabbed his finger and shook his finger. It was pretty funny.
That's hilarious.
Let's get to real meat here, where I really loved this pay-per-view. Gabe Kidd and Alex Coughlin are your strong openweight tag team champions. They took on El Fantasmo, ELP, and Hikuleo. And we get new tag team champions, the strong openweight tag team champions, El Fantasmo and Hikuleo. Great match. El Fantasmo getting the cover there. I loved it. And I know you love some ELP. And I love
him. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad he finally got a belt. And it's cool to see here. Also, they changed up the Gorilla of Destiny theme and added in the ELP. It was really cool. Guys, we saw Motor City Machine Guns in this next match in a New Japan ring. I love seeing it. The never openweight six-man tag team champions, Okada, Tanahashi, and Ishii. They took on Josh Alexander, and then, of course, Motor City Machine Guns, Chris Sabin, and Alex Shelley. Great match. Chaos retained their champions. The never openweight championship is on the line with David Finley, your Bullet Club leader after kicking Jay White out. He's going to take on Tama Tonga. And Tama Tonga wins, becoming your new never openweight champion. It's a second run. And, God, it was a great match. And it really was terrific. And I'm a big Tama Tonga fan. Honestly, I think he should be pushed right to the top.
Hey, PJ, explain to me how David Finley can kick Jay White out of the Bullet Club, but Jay White is the leader of Bullet Club Gold in AEW.
Because it's different promotions. It's one of those things where it's like, well, I'll go make my own kind of thing.
Okay. Even
David Finley cuts promos like that other Bullet Club doesn't matter anymore. That's why Juice Robinson's over there. He doesn't matter anymore. Because you got to remember, David Finley and Juice Robinson were...
They were tag team
partners for a long time, yeah.
Yeah, now I was just curious, and I'm sure there's some people that might be listening that aren't familiar with New Japan. They probably heard of the Bullet Club, but when they hear that that someone like Jay White was kicked out of the Bullet Club, why is he still rocking a Bullet Club shirt? And so I kind of wanted some clarification, not just for myself, but for the listeners as well.
That makes sense, actually. I should have maybe covered that a little bit.
Oh, totally okay.
Yeah, I'll do better. I actually forgot that Clark Connors and his new partner, Drilla Maloney, is our Bullet Club as well. And I didn't actually know that until I watched this this pay-per-view. Somehow I missed that. I also want to mention, when I talk about Juice Robinson and David Finley being tag team, they actually defeated the Gorillas of Destiny, G.O.D., who's Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, at Wrestle Kingdom a few years ago to reclaim the tag team champions. That was a great match. Let's get to the triple threat here for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. Hiromu Takahashi. Yeah, Takahashi versus Speedball, Mike Bailey versus Yo. Now, Lilo Rush was supposed to be in this match, and he became very sick overseas and couldn't make the flight back, blah, 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 blah. They discussed it, and during a press conference, Yo interrupted Takahashi, and he stepped in his partner's place to be in this terrific triple threat match. It reminded me of three-way dance, ECW style, just, you know, without the weapons and such, but it was a really, really good match. Really enjoyed it. Let's get to the main event here. Sonata versus Evil for the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. Of course, you talk about tag teams going at it. These guys were some of the best, well, you know, one of the best tag teams in New Japan in LIJ when Evil went to Bullet Club. So Evil took down Sonata and didn't win the belt, but he stole the belt. So now this is Sonata's chance to get his belt back from Evil. This is in a lumberjack match, so you have just five guys on the outside, along with the Bullet Club Darkness Club on the outside, or House of Torture. That's right, House of Torture on the outside. The best part of this match is what I showed you with Red Shoes not counting the three for Evil and giving him the double FU, and then giving the double FU to Jado as well, or Gato rather. Love it. And Sonata wins here. He even does a Everything is Evil, which I like Evil, man. I just don't think he should have won this. I know Morgan, shout out to Morgan, our buddy from Suplex City, he hates Evil, and I always get on him about it. But yeah, Sonata went over here. It was fantastic. Great match. So Sonata's still your IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. And that went into the press conference for Wrestle Kingdom this year, or next year rather, where the main event was official. Tetsuya Naito versus Sonata for the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. I am very excited. I cannot wait. Yeah.
Listen, it's gonna be good stuff. I'll be honest, I hate the fact, and I don't want to say I hate because that's too strong of a word. I'm personally disappointed that it's not my guy, Jeff Cobb. Jeff Cobb would lose in night one, in the penultimate match of night one of this event, Destruction, to Tetsuya Naito for the G1 Climax Trophy called the Tokyo Dome IWGP World Heavyweight Championship Challenge Right Certificate. And Naito defended that against Jeff Cobb. And Jeff Cobb lost that match. And you know how big of a fan I am of Jeff Cobb after having done his signing with our guy Will, a.k.a. Commish of Suplex City. But nevertheless, yeah, you're right. Naito versus Sonata for the title is going to be a phenomenal matchup. Listen, PJ does a lot of talking and a lot of watching New Japan Pro Wrestling. We are not getting paid by New Japan. But go to njpwworld.com and go sign up for New Japan World. What's the actual streaming service called? Is it just New Japan World?
Yeah, New Japan World, yeah.
Where you can watch all, I think they have most of their old New Japan events on here.
Yeah.
I think there may be a free trial if you sign up. There's an option. You're probably wondering if it's a Japanese-based website. Like, it's probably all going to be Japanese. There's an English translation at the top of the screen that tells you exactly what everything is. There are English translators. Listen, if you can't get enough wrestling in the United States, be it AEW, WWE, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, the NWA, who is now going into, we haven't even talked about that yet, PJ.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe wait. Let's just go ahead and talk it briefly because we're really, really up against it right now. But Billy Corgan, the owner of the NWA, is essentially going the territorial route again. If you're a wrestling historian, like I would consider myself, the back in the day before Vince McMahon started purchasing old territories and creating what is now the global leader in sports entertainment / pro wrestling, there were the territories.
Yeah.
And now Billy Corgan is now going in and officially acknowledging territorial championships as championships affiliated with the NWA. So if you can't get enough of United States Pro Wrestling, go over to New Japan World and give it a look, because it's going to be some of the best wrestling that you will be able to find out there.
Totally agree. So I also want to talk really briefly too about Royal Quest 3, New Japan Pro Wrestling Royal Quest 3 that goes over in the UK. The main event saw Will Ospreay defending the IWGP United Kingdom Heavyweight Champion against Zack Sabre Jr. What a hell of a match, man. Take the time to look up that match if you can. Also, all the matches were really, really well done. But I do have to mention something Destruction. After the three-way for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, we get a return of Tashi Ishimori, who is going to challenge Takahashi to power struggle for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. And before we go to the curtain call, real quick, I just have to add because I'm going to brag about this a lot, the New Japan event that Joe, shout out to Joe, and I are seeing in Vegas. I want to talk a little bit about the match card that we're going to get to see. Of course, I did mention that we're going to be seeing Tiger Mask, which I cannot wait for. But I think the main event is really going to make you look. Sonata and the new Five Guys member, Yuya Imura? Imura. I have to learn a little bit more about him. He's a young lion. He's going to take on Tetsuya Naito and Hiromu Takahashi. That's the main event of the house show that I'm seeing. But you're also going to see ELP and Hikuleo versus Alex Zane and Lance Archer. And we're going to get to see your boy, Alex Coughlin and Jeff Cobb are going to take on Kojima and Fred Rosser. I want to also mention, there's more matches on the card, but I don't want to take too much of the time. I do want to mention too, guys, this is going to be televised. I didn't know that, but it's on the New Japan schedule to be televised, which means if there's an English commentary, I might get to also see Kevin Kelly. And I know that doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but, you know, Frick, you could definitely agree with me on this. We grew up listening to Kevin Kelly doing interviews and things like that, you know. I mean, he was Hermy, you know. So I'm really excited to maybe see Kevin Kelly. It's on the schedule for New Japan World, which means they might have the English commentary there live, or it's going to be after the fact. But either way, this is going to be a really good event. October 28th at Sam's Town, Las Vegas. I'm very, very stoked for this.
Shout out to Joe, because he was actually in my backyard last weekend, and I wasn't here. So I'm going to have to remedy that situation at some point. PJ, we're up against it. Let's get to our curtain call. We're going to count down our top five biggest debuts in a rival company in pro wrestling history, meaning a guy that you recognize from one company jumping ship and going to the other. And in our opinion, the biggest debuts. PJ, who you got at your number five?
So number five to me, right off the rip, I think of Medusa going over to WCW.
That's a good one, because that was when she threw the WWF Women's title in the trash can. So when she left WCW, went to WWE, and then came back and dropped the title. That's a good one. I'm giving you my number five, the Radicals going over to WWE. Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn, and Eddie Guerrero, or I'm sorry, Dean Malenko. Those four guys were sort of the pillars of the hard workers in WCW, and to see them jump ship was sort of the nail in the coffin, in my opinion, for WCW, which is why I put them at number five. PJ, give me your number four.
The Radicals are actually high on my list. It's funny, but they're also on my list. But my number four was Rey Mysterio going to WWE. Now, I know that was after WCW closed down, but I mean, I think it was still a big deal, and I think it counts.
No, listen, I'm not going to disagree with you. My number four is in TNA, and that was when Kurt Angle jumped ship from WWE to go to TNA. Now, granted, he had his own demons that he was dealing with, but he was slated to be on this heavy push in WWE's version of ECW, and he chose to take his ball and go elsewhere. And so his debut in TNA was sort of TNA's big splash. Now, granted, they had brought in Sting, they had had the Outsiders there already, they had brought in Christian Cage, but Kurt Angle was that guy who would never work for another wrestling promotion, and all of a sudden he was jumping ship to TNA. It was TNA's, to me, their first real push to be competition for WWE. PJ, what is your number three?
My number three is Nakamura to WWE. I have a personal connection to that too. I was just so excited about it, and I just couldn't believe it was happening.
Well, I get it. My number three stays in WWE, but it's Chris Jericho. I mentioned the Radicals at number five. Chris Jericho was the first guy that was sort of the homegrown talent from WCW to kind of pick up a jump ship. I know we had seen Mark Marrow jump from Johnny B. Badd to WWE, but that was sort of early on. And not to mention Johnny B. Badd / Mark Merrill was an older guy, and he sort of fizzled out. Jericho jumping ship to me was a really big deal, because not just because of the importance of it, but because how they pushed it. So that's why I put Jericho at number three. PJ, give me your number two.
So I put my number two was Radicals. You picked that, so then I said, "Oh, okay, I'll pick Jericho." And then you just picked Jericho.
That's fantastic.
Oh, that's pretty funny. No, I mean on the fly, because my number one is obvious, but so my number two, I mean, I'll say Bryan Danielson to AEW. That was a big deal for me.
All right, go ahead and give your number one, because your number one is my number two.
Oh, Scott Hall to number one, or Scott Hall to WCW.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it started the Monday Night War. Well, let's say it started what would become the Monday Night War that we all love and remember, which is why I put it at my number two.
Yeah.
But even prior to that, my number one, as much as I hate to say it, especially because of the way we talked about him on the show, was Hulk Hogan going to WCW.
Yeah.
He was written off for dead. He was going to go and act. Obviously it didn't work out as well as he would have liked to, because he's not a great actor. But he comes in and it makes this big splash that Ted Turner.
Are you telling me that Three Ninjas, High Noon, and Mega Mountain is not a good movie?
I loved Mr. Nanny as a kid, but it was a terrible movie.
Listen to you. Thunder Lips, baby.
Thunder Lips. Oh man, Rocky III. I actually won tickets to a wrestling show from that trivia question. But anyway.
Really? Rocky III is my favorite Rocky. Besides, the first one's amazing, but Rocky III is fantastic.
But yeah, Hulk Hogan jumping ship to WCW was a big deal back then. There's a lot of things that were tied to that, so that's why he comes in my number one. PJ, we are super late. Is there anything?
Can I say if it was done correctly? Do you know what my number one would have been that overshadows all 10 of ours?
Sure,
Bret Hart.
Ooh, yeah.
If he was out the very next night on Monday Night Nitro to cut a, I get so angry about it, to cut a promo about how he was screwed and blah, 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 that would have been number one. But instead, you let him sit at home for a couple months, and it just so, God, it's the weirdest thing. But anyway, just an honorable mention if it was done correctly. But instead, you have him come in and do a special guest referee spot that he blew. Anyway, I look forward to doing this again, guys. Real quick, we're going to be talking a lot more about the next part of our 97 series. I can't wait for that. We've got plenty of notes on that, and we're still getting deep into that. We've got a lot of New Japan stuff coming up, including Road to Power Struggle. And then towards the end of October, when I see that show, after that, we'll probably talk about that as well, which is going to be talking about my experiences there. And Frick, I'm sure you've got a lot of football stuff coming up. I know we're getting antsy into that, into the winter time when football really starts to take off and get hot. So I'm sure you've got some shows coming up.
Yeah, we're halfway through the college football season, so make sure you come in this Wednesday. Baker, Bill, and I are actually talking about our experience together at the Florida-South Carolina game, where we saw some really fun stuff take place. For me, not so fun towards the end. But yeah, come follow the Cat Cave, my Carolina Panthers podcast, with new co-host Shannon Smith. He joined me last week, and he should be joining as a permanent co-host moving forward here. Even with the when Michael Davis is able to come back to the show, the Panthers lost again this week. They are still the last winless team in the NFL. So make sure you go to the Tobacco Road Sports Radio's YouTube channel to follow the Keep Pounding Podcast Network's family of Carolina Panthers podcasts. And make sure wherever you find your podcast to go follow the Fans First Sports Network powered by, the Keep Pounding Podcast powered by the Fans First Sports Network. And then again, Wednesday, live 8 o'clock, Banker Bill and I are going to go and talk some more college football, pro football, fantasy football. Will be our first start sit segment to tie in with Bullies, Buys, and Sells. So stay tuned for that and much more. Thank you all for joining us on a late episode where we talked all things pro wrestling. For PJ Steven, it's your guy, Bully Rye, and we'll see you next time right here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns.